The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 9 minutes after 7, I was just reading an email from Kevin Sterrett of Oregon Firearms Federation to House Republican Leader Christine Drazen. And the response back was more or less, I want you to call the Democrats that are passing the gun control bills, that want the gun control bills, and just overwhelm them and just tell them that we don't want it. I think it's kind of passing the buck. Ron, what are you thinking about that? Morning.
Well, I'm thinking that the legislature wants over a million Oregonians to do it. First, dig their own graves. Second, build a hanging platform. Third, buy the rope. Fourth, buy the stool that we're going to kick out from underneath us. And then they'll come along with their bulldozer and bulldoze us into these graves. And they'll be happy because they will be the leaders of Oregon, and the people will be the worm food.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like you must be part of the Christine Drazen strategy. That sounds like that's her strategy then, to pretend to get along, to go along, and don't walk out because it could get in the way of our careers there. Meanwhile, we twist in the wind. Is that kind of it, huh?
The solution that I was leading to would be to deny quorum. This goes against and violates our state and federal constitutions. These people have violated their oath to office. They need to leave their stations because they violate their oath.
All right. Appreciate the call, Ron. We'll have to talk more on about this because calling the Democrats will not affect anything. This is their wet dream. I think they count on the Republicans not doing anything in response. And by the way, it's really hard when you're in the minority, like the Republicans are. But it's the only policy. It's the only strategy they have left. It doesn't matter how many Democrats you talk to. You know, even this deal about repealing Senate Bill 762, you know, the wildfire map, I'll believe it's repealed when it's repealed. The only difference between gun control and Senate Bill 762 is that there are a lot of Democrats that had their property screwed with, too, out there in the wildlands, and that was the only difference, though. I don't think with the firearms situation, you have the same kind of Democratic pushback, which is going to come back. Most of them don't care. This is their wet dream to disarm the good people of Oregon. But anyway, we'll talk more about that coming up, too. 14 after 7, proud to have Dr. John Lott Jr. back on the program. And, of course, he's the founder of Crime Prevention Research Center, crimeresearch.org. Dr. Lott is an economist and world-recognized expert on guns and crime. And when you want the real, I guess the real stats, the real information about guns and crime, boy, he's the guy to turn to. Dr. Lott, great to have you back on the program. Good morning, sir.
It's great to talk to you. Thanks for having me back on.
Hey, I wanted to touch on something. I don't know if you've looked into this, but over the weekend we had, and I should have mentioned this before we went on, but did you hear about the New Mexico shootings in which a number of children injured and adults died? Did you hear about that over the weekend? Did you catch any of that news at all? Just curious before I ask this.
I saw that. Basically, you have a couple gangs, criminal gangs, fighting against each other at that. You're talking about at that kind of
the public park, the informal car show that happened on a Friday night, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
All right. Thank you, because you just said what nobody else had been reporting on the entire weekend. Everything was referencing teens.
Right.
And as soon as I heard John, Dr. Lott, the teens, I'm thinking, oh no, listen, teens don't get together for an impromptu gang, for an impromptu car show night at a public park at 10 o'clock at night. And then all of a sudden gunfire breaks out. But gangs do that sort of thing, juvenile delinquents, gangs, things like that. But all they talked about is teens in the media. Everywhere I looked, even on town hall, they just talked about teens. Like, wait a minute, there had to be a little bit more to it. And thank you for pointing a little truth to that. Okay. Hey, go ahead, please.
The problem is, so many of these mass shootings actually are drug gangs fighting against each other over drug turf. And the thing is, they want to have use this to go and push for more gun control. The problem is that how hard do you think it is, or how easy do you think it is to take away guns from drug gangs? I mean,
I would imagine it's rather difficult. It's not exactly like they're going to walk in and just turn them in willingly, right?
Right, but I mean, look, these are groups that go and smuggle illegal drugs into the country. Even if I could click my fingers and cause all illegal drugs and all guns in the United States to disappear, how long do you think it would be before illegal drugs would start coming into the country again? And how long do you think it would be before the drug gangs would bring in the weapons that they need to protect that extremely valuable property that they have?
Yeah, it's a very good point. So the approach, though, from government is to always go after everyone's rights, it seems, when it comes to the firearm, rather than dealing with crime-ridden populations. Wouldn't that be a better or a more accurate way of describing what's going on? Certain portions of the population are engaging in a lot of violent crime. Isn't that the real issue in play?
That's exactly right.
All right. Now, I was talking to you about how Oregon finds itself rather surrounded on all sorts of gun control issues here as of late. Could you explain what happened with the Ninth Circuit decision last week with the magazine bans in California? And they were claiming that was constitutional. Was that, you know, a legally sound one in your view? I know you're not an attorney by trade, but you certainly study enough of this.
Right. Well, look, you can pretty much determine how people are going to rule on this, the judges, based on whether they were Democrats or Republicans. And Democrats control the Ninth Circuit. And so what happens is that you get you make a district court decision that says that the law is unconstitutional, and then you may have a three-judge panel where you just by the luck of the draw, you end up getting, a couple Republicans out of the three on it that says it's unconstitutional. But then they go and have what's called an en banc decision where, since the Democrats control the circuit as a whole, they go and rehear the case and then say that the laws consistently say that the laws are constitutional. And, as some of the dissents made pretty clear, the decision just completely ignored Supreme Court precedent. They just going and doing things on their own with regard to this. I mean, some of these things are kind of arbitrary. They want to go and say, look, as long as the gun can fire a bullet, then we haven't, impinged on anybody's ability to go and have a gun.
Yeah, ignore the fact that the magazine is a necessary part of the gun. Of course, wasn't there, was a judge, one of the judges I know that I watched his video, did an amazing video dissent in addition to his written dissent. But he took his own Sig Sauer P320 that he used for target practice. I guess he's a competition. He's a gun competitor. And he was demonstrating it on his own firearm, the illogic of his own court. And so he was, countering what they were saying. And he made them look ridiculous on its face. But still, the ridiculous won the day legally, I guess. Right? That's unfortunately where we find ourselves at the moment.
Right. Well, I mean, they didn't, I don't really think that they cared about logic per se. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to get the decision that they had. Look, if you read the majority decision there, as long as you had one bullet in the chamber, you could make it so that, there's no magazine at all in the gun.
Yeah, and you're right. Your Second Amendment right has not been violated in any way, right? That kind of thing.
That's right. So, I mean, there's no limiting factor there. They could say, look, as long as you don't even have a magazine, we could ban those completely. You can still fire one bullet as long as you have one bullet in the chamber. I'm not exactly sure how you're going to get a bullet in the chamber of a semi-automatic without having a magazine.
But, you know, those are not questions that they worried about too much.
Yeah, it does appear that the courts, especially on the West Coast, are doing everything, doing backflips to avoid actually complying with the Supreme Court's orders. Where do you go? What do you think a country goes in a situation like that when the Supreme Court of the land is no longer something that is able to... I mean, it's true that a Supreme Court, yeah, this is the ruling on the law, and it's not like they have an army to support it, but there is a real challenge going on with this. They're just openly ignoring or defying the court on this, are they not? I mean, how does something like this play out, you wonder?
Right. Well, the thing is, you have about two-thirds of the district and circuit court judges in this country are Democrats.
They are. Two-thirds. Okay.
And, you know, as I said, it's not... You'd like to believe that courts would follow precedent or whatever, but they don't. And, you know, they don't. They don't really care. They just care about the outcome that's there. Now, hopefully, there's a couple cases that the Supreme Court has before it right now that are related to what's happened here in the Ninth Circuit. That they'll take this next term. You know, the problem is that the court usually likes to limit itself to cases where there's splits among the circuits. And the problem is that you have basically the Democrat-controlled states are in circuits that the Democrats strongly control. And you're not having the circuits where you have Republicans in control facing these questions about whether these types of bans are constitutional or not. And so...
So there's no split among and no difference of opinion then.
Exactly.
I didn't realize that's how that worked, though. Now, this is the way the Supreme Court acts, though, but... If the Supreme Court is not willing to step in on this, then essentially we will end up having two Second Amendments, a Second Amendment very weakened, and if not non-existent, in California, Oregon, Washington, you know, and most of the Ninth Circuit, as the case might be. And then the Red State Second Amendment. Could that really be what we're looking at here, Dr. Lott?
Well, that's what we're looking at right now. Mm-hmm. And the question is how long that stays in effect. Look. What you're going to find is that Trump's going to be putting more judges on the courts for the lower courts.
I don't think he's going to replace two-thirds of the Democrats, though, on the circuit, right?
Well, I don't think he has to. He just has to get it back to, you know, 50-50 or something like that.
Okay.
Or maybe a slight Republican majority on these things. The problem is in the Ninth Circuit, there's one Democrat appointee, I think by Obama, who's like 77 years old. There's another one who's like 67, and then everybody else is younger than that. And so, you know, there's a possibility he's not going to be able to replace any of the Democrats that are on the circuit. And if that's the case, then the Democrats will continue at least for the next 4 years. Having a majority on the court there, but if he can replace a couple of the Democrats, then it could flip toward the Republicans.
All right, very good. Dr. John Lott Jr., once again, Crime Prevention Research Center, crimeresearch.org is his website. You have an article today which popped up on the Federalist, federalist.com, and it has to do with concealed carry. And, you know, even in the state of Oregon, which for the long time had a pretty darn good concealed carry law, and it didn't seem to cause much trouble. Democrats are trying to, you know, get rid of it and chip away at it, a death of a thousand cuts, because they're in charge in the Oregon legislature. And, of course, you know about the Measure 114 challenge, which has, I mean, all these...
court recently.
Yeah, exactly. Just insane. What is the real crime statistic, though, when it comes to... concealed carry and stopping mass shootings, or stopping active shooters, I think is the better way of going about this, because you ended up delving into the stats, and the stats are quite interesting, because we're told that we don't really need concealed carry people out there because, well, we have the police. What do the crime statistics actually say to this?
So active shooting cases are instances where guns fired in public, not part of some other type of crime like a robbery or a gang fight over drug turf, anything from one person being shot at and missed all the way up to a mass public shooting. It's the FBI's definition of these things. The reason why we decided to kind of do a deep dive into this to look at these cases is that, you know, over the last couple of years since the Bruin decision was made by the Supreme Court, you know, television, entertainment, media type things has been kind of on a tear trying to show concealed carry permit holders on these various police shows on ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox as always having something go wrong. Either they shoot the wrong person or they get in the way of the police.
Yeah, trying to condition people that leave all defense to the trained professionals.
Exactly, and they use that exact term. And so we wanted to go and see, you know, does that happen? You know, what's the rate that it happens? And there are a couple things that we found. One is the most basic point is that it's clear police who are in uniform have an incredibly difficult job doing stopping these types of attacks. You know, put yourself in the place of one of these murderers. If you see somebody in uniform there, you're going to wait until the officer either leaves the area before you attack, or you move on to another target yourself, or if you're going to go and do the attack there, who do you think you're going to take out first? Because the one person that you know for sure has a gun is the police officer.
Yeah, sure. So you're going to shoot the police officer first is what you're going to
do.
Okay.
And what you find is that, in fact, civilians with concealed carry permits are stop these active shooting cases at a higher rate than police officers do. They're also much less likely to end up being killed. So even though civilians are stopping more of these attacks, only two concealed carry permit holders were shot to death. And that's about 1% of the civilians involved in stopping these attacks. 27 police officers were killed. A rate that's more seven times higher per attack than civilians were killed. And it's basically because of the extremely difficult job that the police have when you have somebody in uniform. They're a real.
Yeah, but also when you have the uniform on, you have painted the target on yourself for an active shooter, right? And the whole aspect of a concealed carry person out there in the crowd or out in the public, though, is that they don't know. You know, the active shooter person comes up there. They don't know who's armed, and so they don't even necessarily even know where returning fire could come from. But with a police officer, they go after the police officer first. Kind of like if you were going to shoot up a school, you would, God forbid, we never see this here in Southern Oregon, but you know, it'd be the resource officer, the school police officer, they would likely receive the first incoming. That sort of thing, right?
That's exactly right. So they have a very difficult job. But, you know, you look at some of these other things, like accidentally shooting a bystander. There's one case out of 180 instances where a concealed carry permit holder accidentally wounded a bystander. There's four cases, actually, where the police accidentally killed bystander. Two of them were actually other police officers who are killed in kind of friendly fire type situations.
Yeah.
And two of them more civilians.
It is a fascinating article up on the Federalist. It really is here, in which it goes against everything that Hollywood and the television show producers are telling you. So every time you see a concealed carry person, they usually end up saying this person is kind of like either a vigilante killer shooting the wrong person or getting shot themselves. Is that normally how they portray it in Hollywood?
Yeah. That something goes wrong. They get in the way of the police. The gun's taken away from them and used against them. We couldn't find one case where the concealed carry permit holder got in the way of police officers doing their job to stop these attacks.
So just understand this when you actually watch this, how they're trying to control our minds and our reaction for such important public policy issues, such as the concealed carry handgun issue, because it's been growing a lot. And so, needless to say, the left was really concerned about this, and they're just doubling down then, I guess, on the lies. The stats actually show better than police in these particular issues. All right. Dr. Lott, thank you so much for that story. I'm going to link to that and also everything else about your great Crime Prevention Research Center, crimeresearch.org, where you can read up on the real stats, the real news on this important public policy issue. Thank you, doctor. Be well.
It's great talking to you. Thank you.
Always good. Thank you. 732, rather, at KMED, 99.3 KBXG. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided. By Dish.
If your garage or overhead shop door needs service or repair, please consider American Industrial Door. They have experienced and professional technicians with a fleet of trucks that can repair and service any door or opener. And if you need advice or just have a question about your door, just give them a call or stop by either showroom. They've been your garage door experts in Southern Oregon for nearly 40 years. American Industrial Door on Crater Lake Avenue, north of Vilas Road, and on Union Avenue in Grants Pass.
In 2005, John and Dan acquired Drake's Paint, your local Benjamin Moore dealer, from their fathers. More important than the assets was the cherished family business name. The cousins still work hard every day to honor the name passed down from over a century, symbolizing the values and tradition the Drakes built before them. At Drake's Paint, you get top quality Benjamin Moore paint and stain, and the legacy of service and value preserved for generations. Drake's Paint, your only locally owned paint store in Medford and Grants Pass.
You're hearing The Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED.
Some more emails of the day, sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. By the way, if you need some specialized mouthwashes or water pick, anything like that, they have a special kiosk. You don't even have to be their patient. You can get these items that you need to take care of your teeth and keep them from becoming teeth. In other words, you lose them. you can get those at his cost. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. It's on Freeman Way, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant. Bonnie Hadley writes me from Tualatin and says, hey, Bill, I would bet, I was talking last hour about how the state of Oregon is going to be doubling down on reading training because they're saying we need to get more into the science of reading. Reading is still miserable within the public schools. And I keep wondering what's going on and how is it that teachers are coming out of the teaching colleges not learning or not being able to teach how to read in the first place? And what is this science of reading? Because my mother taught me how to read when I was four, maybe even a little bit younger than that. I know many other parents had taught their children how to read. And they unlocked the mysteries. And it helped us so much in public school to be able to read and comprehend and be able to get into this. And you know, when I see the science of reading thing, it just strikes me as yet another program to make it more complex than it really is. And Bonnie says, Bill, I would bet that few of our current teachers were taught to read in a way that naturally enables them to teach others. Our parents, and probably you and I, class of 80, learned how to read by understanding what each letter did so that we could figure out the words that we hadn't seen before, knowing the sound that each letter makes and how they combine. School districts always ask for more money. No matter the problem, there is no fiscal accountability or common sense in the offices running our schools. All right, I appreciate you reading about that. Dale weighs in on this one. Morning, Bill, about learning to read and read well and understand. Think back to when you wanted to become a ham radio operator and needed to learn the Morse code at various levels. You first learn what each letter sounds like, and then each word, and eventually some complete phrases and sentences. Is that a science or just a method or a system? I learned to read some early words when my mother would read to me from a little Golden Book story. Many times she would say out loud, didn't exactly match the picture in the book, and I asked her why. And she pointed out to me that the words that told the story. I watched her read to me and learn many of the sounds of the words and could soon read them at around the age of 4. Reading is first learning what each letter can sound like, and then each word, and then phrases and sentences. We learn the exceptions and we try to remember them. Various combinations of letters can have different sounds, depending on the word makeup. That's about it. Lots of reading of interesting stories eventually turns into what we need and then want to learn. That's it. The science is the sounds, which is audio, and then become a silent way to read. There is more to it the further we progress. The mind must get the pictures of the words and the pictures of the stories. Dale, I appreciate your writing. I appreciate that indeed. And let's see, is there anybody else? Patrick says, Bill, when has throwing more money at any government program made it any more efficient or productive? Look at the Postal Service as an example. Oh, I don't know about that. Patrick, because, gosh, there were tons of people out over the weekend. Man, it was a nationwide day of action, Sunday. Looked at it all through the local TV channels and everybody else. But I don't know. Say, hands off our Postal Service that people aren't using to the same extent. And boy, I know there are great people in there. You know what I am hearing? What I am hearing about this, though, Patrick and others, is that there is talk of redistributing postal workers to accomplish a different task within government that is able to use their particular set of skills to keep many of them still within the government system, but doing situations or doing tasks which are more needed than perhaps trying to deliver letters to people who aren't writing letters anymore 6 days a week. Could be interesting stuff. Stay tuned, huh?
The Outdoor Report is every Friday morning just past 7 a.m. on The Bill Meyer Show. The Outdoor Report on KMED and The Jukebox 99.3 covers recreational opportunities and is powered by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your department of adventure, off Vilas Road on Airway Drive.
Have your taxes gotten off track? Just call Zach, CPA at First Response Resolution. Visit firstresponseirs.com today to see what Zach can do for you. First Response Resolution in Eagle Point is your first response to the IRS, defending your rights as a taxpayer.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. If you want to help Oregonians affected by flooding, be careful not to get scammed. The Oregon Department of Emergency Management says there's increased risks of fraud following flooding. They say be careful to avoid fake fundraising accounts on GoFundMe. OEM recommends only making donations to organizations or individuals you know. Oregon is joining the rest of the states supporting a lawsuit against the federal government over denial of education benefits for two vets. The lawsuit claims they were denied 4 years of benefits under the GI bills. It argues the Veterans Administration has taken a restrictive interpretation that contradicts past rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court. The Trump administration plans to close field offices for the Department of Housing and Urban Development in Portland and Seattle. Democratic members of Oregon's congressional delegation are working to reverse that decision. They say regional staff have the experience to meet local needs. The nearest field office would be in San Francisco. Bill London, KMED News.
I Feel the Earth Move is a pop hit recorded by Carole King in 1971. If your house has sloping floors, cracks in walls, or doors and windows that are not shutting smoothly, you may not have felt the earth move, but you can bet it's happening. Call Millett Construction for a free inspection and estimate to level your house and fix the water issue that's causing the problem. By the way, the flip side of the 45 was even a bigger hit. It's too late, so don't wait. Visit MillettConstruction.com. CCB number 32787.
Hi, it's John at Welburn's Weapons. The only thing better than shooting is shooting with a suppressor. Welburn's is Southern Oregon's suppressor headquarters, stocking models from Silencer Co., Dead Air, Griffin Armament, Rugged, Q, Thunderbeast, and many more. And we can order practically any suppressor on the market. Check in with us for monthly incentives to save on suppressors, too. Come see the suppressor experts. Welburn's Weapons on Crater Lake Highway, just south of White City.
Hi, I'm Randy with Diner 62, and I'm on KMED.
Sarah Parshall Perry is the Vice President and Legal Fellow at Parents Defending Education. And we're going to talk with her about, I was just talking about education just a moment ago, Sarah, here in Oregon, all we need to do is throw more money at the public schools, and then we're going to get smarter. We'll learn how to read. We'll learn how to cipher, do mathematics, things like that, and everything will be just fine. How are you this morning?
That's it. I'm doing really well. Good to be with you, Bill.
Yeah. You know, the latest here, and I just mentioned this to you briefly, there's a House bill that wishes to double down on teaching kids how to read. And older listeners here, you know, and I'm in my early 60s. I don't know how old you are, Sarah. I never ask a woman their age, that kind of thing. But I'm assuming you're a woman, but I didn't mean to misgender you,
well,
if that's the case.
Once again, you could have misgendered me. But, you know, thankfully, I am someone who has not been lost to reason ever by the transgender juggernaut.
So oh, good.
You assumed correctly.
All right. So you are not then, you're not down then with the transgender turtle who is running parts of the Oregon Health Authority section. You heard that story? Boy.
No, but nothing would surprise me.
Yeah. Well, I know that what is happening here in the state legislature, they want to double down on reading. And they're saying, hey, you know, the kids are still having great difficulty reading. And people of a certain age, that would include me and many of my listeners, many of us were taught by our parents to read. And we were taught to sound out the words. We were effectively, you know, hooked on phonics before there was a Hooked on Phonics program. And I was reading at a fourth grade level, even in first grade, and always did well in school for that reason. It is the key to unlock it. Why does it seem to be so difficult to get kids to read? Does PDE get involved in stuff like that, or is it just embedded in the system and the kids have gotten dumber? I'm starting to wonder.
It's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both. I think what we're looking at is an expenditure that is having a decreased yield for all of the money that's been thrown at so-called education for the past series of decades since its initiation in 1979. This has been a losing experiment. The Department of Education has only gotten bigger, and National Assessment of Education Placement scores have only gone down. Remember, we spent during the COVID pandemic billions of dollars, $200 billion in additional education funding during COVID-19, we actually saw substantial learning losses that resulted. That typifies the complete ineffectiveness of the current federally driven model, and it's complicated by the fact that we've seen government initiatives specifically driven toward critical race theory and critical gender theory, which, as you know, have absolutely nothing to do with getting kids to learn reading, writing, arithmetic, science, history, civics. These absolutely have taken away the substantial loss of potential learning opportunities. And what we've seen now is lower educated children who are more indoctrinated, and they are actually graduating, many of them, at or below their actual reading level. In fact, I have just moved recently out of the state of Maryland, and now I'm a resident of the Free Commonwealth of Virginia, thank goodness. But in 2023, 13 Baltimore, Maryland high schools had zero students who tested proficient in mathematics. It's not just reading, it's math as well, and it's because too much money has yielded too much politics at the local level, and we're taking away precious learning time in favor of pushing radical ideologies that do nothing but divide students.
What role is the liberalism of teaching colleges? What role does it play in this one? Because you look at the educational system here, Sarah. And I know you're female, so I'm not making a bag on all females, all right? But the educational system is largely controlled by women, and most of all, white liberal women. Would you agree with that? Yeah. With that assumption, first off?
No, I would say, first of all, that's 100% accurate. And what happens is, for some reason, we find women, and perhaps it's the way that we're wired, we could be more relational, we could be more empathetic, and so causes that lean towards social justice narratives, like transgenderism, like critical race theory, and inherent bias or privilege or racism are those kinds of policies, they're those kinds of narratives that are particularly effective in sort of targeting.
So it attracts them to women. Profession. Would that be a way of putting it?
I think that's it. We still see substantially more female teachers than we do more male teachers, and the role of these teaching colleges, they have always been lost to conservative thought, but particularly so in this environment, when we know many of the colleges and universities that actually deal with programs like social work or education are spending disproportionately on these particular types of bias-led programs. So, in fact, we just released our report on social work just a few days ago. Mm-hmm. These grants that were going into the states, 19 states received more than $100 million in education grant funding. 25 colleges and universities received these grants. We're looking at classes like Cal State Fresno's Theories of Diversity and Oppression, University of Anchorage, Alaska Anchorage, Master of Social Work program dedicated to, quote, advancing human rights, engaging in anti-racist, anti-oppressive social work justice practice. Florida International University, their Project DIG, focusing on recruiting and retaining credentialed mental health providers from diverse backgrounds, and anti-racist and anti-oppressive frameworks in education and social work. Indiana University, diversity, human rights, and social justice coursework. I could go on and on. These 25 colleges and universities who are receiving these grants, gearing up young professionals for social work and teaching enterprise, are actually spending taxpayer dollars to radicalize them before they are sent into public education classrooms.
Boy, the only thing that's missing is the shaved head and the power fist raised, you know, that kind of thing.
You got it. Hmm. Well, don't forget the nose ring, Bill.
Oh, the nose ring. Pardon me. The nose ring, too. Sarah Parshall Perry, once again, Vice President and Legal Fellow at Parents Defending Education, and it's defendinged.org. Now, there are $100 million of taxpayer funding, you know, going to push these social justice warrior kind of grants throughout the system. And something tells me that there may be a lot more where that came from. Is DOGE discovering more of this? And where do you see this headed in the current administration, especially with their desire to close the Department of Ed?
Yeah, you know what? I think that what the president has done is an excellent first step. The executive order that we saw come out, and what I loved was actually how he titled the executive order. It is a empowering parents, states, and communities executive order to improve education outcomes. He actually leads with parents. As somebody who is a parent of three kids, that's incredibly gratifying to see. I was also former senior counsel in the Civil Rights Office at Department of Education during his first administrative term. So I feel very passionately about the cause of public education. I don't want to cede it to the left. I think culturally, when conservatives say, we're going to throw up our hands, send everyone into parochial schools, private schools, charter schools, or homeschool, that's not always feasible. In fact, more than 90% of American school kids go to public education outlets. So we have to be practical with the resources we have. But I will tell you, the waste, fraud, and abuse that's being discovered through DOGE is so gratifying to somebody who recognized exactly how poor the outcomes were for as much money as we were spending. We were discovering individuals who were holding book clubs on Ibram X. Kendi's books on inherent racism and bias and how to be an anti-white ally during federal government paid time. That was the kind of conduct that was transpiring behind the scenes. And what I love is the second portion of this executive order also directs that programs or activities still receiving any federal funding will not advance DEI or gender ideology. Why? Because quite simply, those are violations of federal civil rights law. That's a violation of Title VI when you're discussing diversity, equity, and inclusion, or inherent bias, or racist privilege, and it's a violation of Title IX when you're promoting gender ideology because it naturally discriminates against biological women in favor of men who feel like women. So this is an administration that wants to make sure they are cutting off the federal tap for individuals who are promoting civil rights violations. We are already spending too much of taxpayer resources. We have spent now since 1979, 245% more per pupil, and we've received 150% less in outcomes. That is an unconscionable balance, but I think this Department of Education under this administration, pulling the tap and figuring out ways to send these core responsibilities to other executive agencies is the best possible outcome we've seen to date.
Sarah, is there any way Because I'm kind of mixed on the Department of Education shutdown. I know it's bloated, filled with waste and abuse, and frankly, filled with Marxists. Okay, but that being said, here it is: if you're going to reform a huge agency like this and actually get better educational outcomes, there was a part of me that was hoping that. And let me just put it this way: I'll kind of do this informally. President Trump comes into office. President Trump essentially is daddy, all right? And we have the school systems that are run by lots of women with really big daddy issues, okay? I think it's kind of where we are right now. Just when there was the need in some cases for daddy to come in here and spank some people and get some discipline into the educational process, I feel in some ways that it may not necessarily help a blue state like Oregon, which even though we have all these red states and purple or purple counties and red counties here, we're still dancing to the tune, essentially, of lots of women in education with daddy issues. And
yeah. And
President Trump's reform, is that going to affect us? Will it help us or hurt us, or will we just be able to double down on daddy issues here? I don't know.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this executive order is just the beginning of a very, very long process. Remember, the Department of Education can't fully be dismantled without congressional involvement.
And that's true, and that's good. He even notes that, but he can certainly reduce it to the point where it almost doesn't work. It doesn't do nearly or doesn't right. do all that much, right? It's there in name only, really.
Right. And what I know to be the case is that certain federal functions cannot be unilaterally undone. And we know that there are federal civil rights laws that, for example, have to be followed. Those would either be sent to Department of Justice for enforcement or to another enforcement agency. But that's a critical federal function. Another critical federal function is making sure that we are collecting data and we are holding national placement scores accountable for receipt of any federal funding, right?
Ah.
We know, obviously, that is one of the things, the National Assessment of Education Placement Scores and the annual report to Congress, which I worked on myself during my time in the Department of Education. There has to be some federal accountability for making sure that scores are being tracked, civil rights are not being violated, and that we are continuing to see an outcome commensurate to what we are investing. As long as we are sending any federal taxpayer money to these particular schools, and remember, there's also federal, in addition to federal civil rights privacy protections, there are federal student privacy protections as well. FERPA, PPRA, ESEA, which allow things like, for example, parents to come in and observe their child's classroom, to examine their child's curriculum, to examine their child's educational record. We want to make sure that federal laws are being enforced at the federal level, because otherwise we're getting a lot of nefarious outcomes at the state and local level. If, for example, you've got state and local prosecutors or state and local attorney generals or solicitor generals who don't necessarily feel that they want to follow federal law, that's an outcome that is better handled at the federal level in the bright disinfectant light of sun, where everybody can watch what's transpiring and who's being held accountable.
All right. As an example, you were mentioning civil rights law. Civil rights law was there to defend men and women's, or boys and girls, civil rights. It was not to defend the rights of the Island of Misfit Humans to... You like that term, huh? I've been using that term for a number of years here.
I do. I'm very impressed.
Okay. Yeah. Well, just remember, it's from the, nobody wants a Charlie in the box in an old Christmas story, you know, years ago. But the Island of Misfit Humans deal. Civil rights law was not about a guy pretending to be a woman because he feels like a woman to be able to go and just kick all the women out of their own locker room. Okay. Right.
100%.
So is that where I think a lot of the civil rights enforcement is going to be coming down to in the Trump administration? Because Oregon is doubling down on the Island of Misfit Humans. We know that
As is Maine. Absolutely. Well, I can tell you that a number of these particular states and state educational agencies, for example, like the Maryland or the Maine Principals Association or San Francisco State, San Jose University, all of these that are still recalcitrant on the issue of biological distinctions between male and female, who are holding fast to what they seem to think is superior state and local law, but both, of course, are in violation of federal law. The Department of Education is making sure that it is launching what are called directed investigations into these particular educational agencies, whether they are state or whether they are local, whether they are athletic associations, or whether it's the Maine Principals Association that oversees all of Maine's educational outlets itself. But San Jose State, UPenn, University of Maine, Massachusetts Interscholastic Association, and others, they are all being investigated. And that's quite a bit of federal funding on the line for them. Maine itself, for example, receives $250 million a year for federal funding. That's a lot of money. $250 million, that's a lot of money to stake on your ability to pretend you don't know what a biological woman is, and allowing trans-inclusive sports to continue in violation of federal law. Remember, under the Biden administration, we were entertaining this ideological circus. No more. A federal judge has struck down the Title IX regulation under the Biden administration. He vacated it for the entire country. It's in a state of suspended animation. It is not having any effect whatsoever. We're back to male and female on the federal level, and yet states like Oregon and states like Maine are continuing to double down. This is why federal civil rights enforcement is so important, because you will get states like Oregon, California, Michigan, Minnesota, Maine, all of whom will say, we're going to stick to state anti-discrimination law and our own regulations on gender identity in violation of federal law. And we're just going to say things, as Maine Governor Janet Mills did to the president's face himself a few weeks ago, we'll see you in court. Well, that day in court is most definitely coming now that we know that at least six federal investigations have been launched. And I think that's entirely appropriate based on their ideological positioning.
All right. How long do you think it'll take for the federal gun side when it comes to education and these issues we've been talking about ends up being leveled with both barrels, let's say, at the state of Oregon policy? Because at this point, I guess at this point, until the money goes away, nobody thinks it's real. Maybe that's what's going on.
I think that's it. And it's going to take really yanking the chain. And it's after these investigations, the first option they have is to pull federal funding. If they don't pull the federal funding, another option is to kick it to Department of Justice, when you will suddenly have Pam Bondi knocking on your door and saying, we will see you in court for violation of federal civil rights law.
All right. Sarah Parshall Perry, Vice President and Legal Fellow at Parents Defending Education, defendinged.org. Wow. All right. So there is a lot, even if you close the Department of Education, the takeaway I want to come with here is that there is a lot of control that will still be coming in with the grant stream money still available. Is that the takeaway, really, from these changes?
That is the takeaway. Absolutely. And that's the good outcome for the executive order. Not just that we're getting more control for parents and teachers and administrators over things like curriculum and outcomes, but also that we still have federal oversight on very important federal laws like FERPA, like Title IX. And that is truly the best way to go.
How long do you think it will take to reform the teaching colleges where the teachers end up mostly coming from these days? Give me the final word on that.
You know, it's really interesting. It's hard to say, but the investigations that we've been doing in our granted report, which you can find online at defendinged.org, discovering that these teaching colleges, where there are science, social work programs and teaching programs geared toward DEI and critical gender theory, the first thing is pointing out exactly where this is transpiring. And the second is making sure that their federal funding is lost as well. That will have a tendency to reform them, I think, sooner as opposed to later.
Okay. Hey, from your lips, let's hope that this is the case indeed. Sarah, thank you so much for having joined us and explained some of the legal issues behind all of this. Okay, we'll have you back. Be well. Take care.
Thanks so much, Bill.
Thank you. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG Grants Pass, 8 o'clock.
March is Maintenance Madness Month at Kelly's Automotive Service in Grants Pass in Medford. We want to remind you to check your fluids at least once a month to help avoid costly repairs. When you come in for any service at Kelly's, we do a thorough inspection that includes pictures and videos of the good and not so good of your car that are texted and emailed directly to you. You then decide what to fix and how to plan for the future. Check us out at kellysautomotive.com. Kelly's Automotive Service, where we service your vehicle but take care of you.
Life's busy, and you need to be on time, on the road, on schedule, and where you need to be. Power on with trusted, dependable car batteries from Batteries Plus. 700 plus locations nationwide.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art snap-lock machines, we bring precision and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need to worry about transporting materials. We come directly to your project property. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com and discover the ease and quality of metal roofing done right. Transform your home with Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Call today to get an estimate tomorrow. 541-941-3736. CCB number 250730.
Siskiyou Pump Service and Rotary Drilling Company takes pride ensuring their customers get fresh, clean water from field to faucet. Here's a review from Stephanie.
Justin and the team are awesome. We've called them out to our home on two separate occasions, and both times they came and fixed our issues in a quick, efficient, and friendly manner. I can't recommend them enough. We'll only be using Siskiyou in the future.
Providing fresh water for Rogue Valley residents for over 50 years. Visit SiskiyouPump.com.
It's true. Even the rogue gardener faces challenges.
What's a good thing? What isn't a good thing? It can be hard to distinguish. My frustration this year in my gardening was with the birds. That's why I'm talking about birds. All the stuff that they did, starting with the first crop of peas. And I mean, it has just been constant. And yet they did some good things.
Talk about it with Rogue Gardener, Saturdays 10 to noon, Sunday morning encore at 9 on KMED, sponsored by Grange Co-op.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
3 after 8, I appreciate you being here this morning. We'll check Town Hall News in a moment. Dr. Dennis Powers, where past meets present. Talk about some local history, the founding of some of our great cities and towns. Some of my favorites, it's kind of weird, you know. Well, today's going to be Gold Hill. And Gold Hill has always had some interesting history, some interesting present, too, for that matter. We'll have a good conversation. Somebody who I want to, you know, I think I'm going to invite Diana Anderson back on the show. I'm going to see if I can get her on here tomorrow, because there is an interesting story that was in the Rogue Valley Times. Actually, there's a couple of real estate stories. First off, there was the story about the brand new apartment complexes that have gone up around the Trader Joe Northgate parking lot or the Northgate Shopping Center rather, and everything that's going on there, and how there is essentially a 10-year moratorium on property taxes being paid by this, and this was so that we could attract more of these apartment complexes to Medford. And I was talking to a friend about this who was telling me, Bill, you know, this is about climate-friendly, equitable community, CFECT. That's what this was all about. Because what I was wondering about is, why are we saying no property taxes on apartment complexes that cost $1,900 a month? $1,950 a month, I think, was one of the ones they were talking about. And they're talking about all the amazing amenities, the pool, all the rest. What do we need a pool for? We got the... We got Rogue X right across the bridge down the road. I don't know, but I know it's another story. But that probably ends up being one of those climate-friendly, equitable community things that the Medford City Council ended up getting involved in for sweetening this. I mean, it's not exactly what I would call affordable housing. But the reason I want to have Diana back on, and I think this could be an interesting talk, in the Rogue Valley Times, activists want an affordable housing unit on school property. Troy Helley ends up writing, a broad alliance of Ashland leaders continued their pitch for a proposed 90-plus unit affordable housing development that could boost enrollment at schools. At the Ashland High Library, across the street from the proposed 4-acre project site, southeast corner of South Mountain Avenue and East Main Street, about 70 people generally voiced support for the concept. Ashland has needed a project like this for 30 years, said George Kramer, who was in the audience. He said this project addresses a number of local goals for housing for school workers and families, and also could improve the tax base. The reason I find this very interesting is that this focus on increasing the enrollment in the schools, having it on school property. Do you remember the times that Diana Anderson has come in here? By the way, Diana Anderson, co-author of Who Made American Schools Marxist Training Centers. Diana has talked on my show several times about how the ultimate communist goal is that you're always in school and that the schools end up becoming the neighborhood center. And this is where all of the Sovietization of America will end up being finally completed. And we have the Marxists, arguably, many of them in Ashland, that are talking about, oh, we're going to have a housing unit. We're going to have 80-something housing units on school property. So this is the starting of that Sovietization, the communization of this. This would appear to be exactly what Diana was talking about. So I'm going to call her and see if I can get her back on the show. I think she'd have a lot to say about this particular one, because I'm reading this and I'm going like, ding, 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 ding. This is exactly what Diana's talking about. And of course, most of the people are just looking through this. Oh, wouldn't it be great to have affordable housing? It's by the school system. So we can have even more little Marxists popping out of the Plato fun factory of education. All right, we'll catch up on some news, and then Dr. Powers will be joining me here in a few, okay?
News.